for NASCAR Weekend Preview of Atlanta with Hot Topic Sound Off at 10 p.m. tonight. Now, joining us as a guest tonight is Sarah Burgess, the ARCA West driver driving the number 88 with BMI Racing. And joining me for the show tonight is our co-host, Jay Huseman. Welcome to the show, Jay.
Thank you, Sharon. Another wonderful Thursday night as the weather has passed through here us in Mississippi, Alabama area. So good to go for tonight and excited about it.
Yes, indeed. I had the same thing here. We had really high winds, and I kept getting the internet down. But hopefully we're past that, and we're ready to go here for tonight if the weather does pass. All right. Now, in our first half hour, Jay, we are going to get into some updates from the ARCA Menards Series, the ARCA East and the ARCA West Series. At 8:40, our guest, Bridget Burgess, comes on board as part of the conversation, and we're going to be talking to her about her race at Phoenix and what she expects for the race rest of the season. She's racing full-time this year with BMI Racing, and this is the only mother-daughter team in ARCA. So that's pretty exciting.
It certainly is. I can't wait to have her come on here. Super excited she has gotten a sponsorship package to contend and run all year for the ARCA Menards West. You know, we like to see that versus part times here and there. I know some people, that's how they got to start, but to be able to put that package together and go for the entire year is great news.
Definitely. At 9 o'clock in our next half hour, we are going to preview. We're going to do something a little bit different. The SRL Southwest Tour is having their winter showdown this weekend at Kern County Raceway. So we're going to give you a few news and notes of the winter showdown. It's becoming a big event across the country, similar to the Snowball Derby that takes place down in Pensacola, Florida. It's building momentum. This is the sixth annual winter showdown, so we'll talk a little bit about that. Then we preview the NASCAR Truck Series in Atlanta, and then in our third half hour, we'll get into the NASCAR Xfinity Series and the Cup Series at Atlanta. Then 10 o'clock, of course, is our Hot Topic Sound Off with our Fanfare Racing crew. Unfortunately, we thought Andy was going to be joining us tonight, but his work schedule is preventing that, so it will be you and Tommy tonight, Jay.
All right. Well, I don't know if you reached out if Owen was available. I know on a late notice, but Tommy, a great addition we've had on here multiple times now in the last couple of weeks. It has been so great. I mean, Andy, myself, and Mike spent most of last year together. Get these couple new in here and mix it up with us has been really refreshing, if you will.
Yes, indeed. Owen is only available on Monday nights, unfortunately, so I can't ask him for a Thursday night, but definitely we're looking forward to having Tommy on board with us. Okay, let's go ahead and get into the ARCA Menards Series. We're going to have to wait for the next set of races in the ARCA Menards Series. The very first race coming up isn't until next month, and that is for the ARCA Menards Series itself. They'll be racing the General Tire 200 on April the 24th at 1 o'clock Eastern time, and that's going to be at Talladega Super Speedway, so that's going to be a fun one. It will be televised on Fox Sports 1.
Well, a Super Speedway race is eventful no matter what the series, and we've seen some great races. We've seen some wreck fests. I mean, that's all part of it. So we talk about it as each race goes by, the separation and the cream rising to the top. Talladega wild card kind of puts it back into a mix of anything could happen coming out of there.
Yes, indeed. You never know what's going to happen at Talladega. That's what makes it so much fun to watch. All right, next up is May 8th at 9 p.m. Eastern time. The Music City 200 for the ARCA East will take place at the Nashville Fairgrounds Speedway, and that will be live streamed on TrackPass. And I don't have my book open, but I'll check and we'll find out a little bit later. That will take place on TrackPass. And again, I'm not sure if there is a delayed broadcast. Yes, there is. The delayed broadcast is Thursday, May the 13th, and that's 1 p.m. Eastern. So fans will definitely want to mark their calendars for that one.
Now, this one, the East Series, excites me a little bit. Again, we've only had one West race so far, but the East Series, we've had two already, and when I say the cream rises to the top, there's a lot of cream here that could be rising to the top on the East. Sammy Smith and Max Gutierrez both already have wins, sitting first and third in the points respectively. The Taylor Gray's in between them still with two top fives, and we've had seven drivers all have top 10 finishes in those races. So that points battle there is certainly going to be a tight one, and they aren't racing at such a wild card like Talladega, so it's a matter of the top guys are probably going to still be the top guys.
Okay. Now, if you listen to our show on Monday night, I told everyone that our guest tonight was going to be Max Gutierrez. Unfortunately, he had some unexpected things come up, and he was not able to be on the show tonight. When, with a little bit of help today, we were able to get Sarah Burgess to take his place. But do know, and mark your calendar for this, Max Gutierrez is rescheduled for April the 15th. And that's the first available date that I had for him. So look for Max Gutierrez to be on Fan for Racing Radio on March 15th. Next up, we do have the ARCA Menards Series West. We just watched them race this past weekend at Phoenix Raceway. And on June the 5th, this is 2 p.m. Pacific time. I believe that's going to be 4 p.m. Eastern time. No, that's going to be 5 p.m. Eastern time. They will be racing the General Tire 125 at Sonoma Raceway. So that's going to be a road course. And we usually see a couple of other drivers kind of jump into the entry list for this one anytime it's on a road course like this. That, too, is going to be live streamed on TrackPass. And I think I saw earlier that, Sonoma is going to have the delayed broadcast as well. That will be on Wednesday, and it doesn't say the following Wednesday, I'm going to say. I believe that would be Wednesday, June the 9th, and that would be at 4 p.m. Eastern time. So, again, mark your calendar for that one. That's going to be a fun race on the road course.
Definitely road courses always add that little bit of twist and turns, if you will, not just a wide open wild card, but a twist and turns to it. And there again, we have seen some great battles, and I know that's why at the cup level they added a few more road courses this year, because they know that's what fans like to see and watch.
Okay, and then the last race is actually the Sioux Chief Showdown. It's the first Sioux Chief Showdown event. The Toledo 200 will take place on May the 22nd at 8 p.m. Eastern time at Toledo Speedway, and will be televised on MAV TV. So we've got a lot of racing to look forward to here in the ARCA Menards Series.
We certainly do, and I really applaud NASCAR for their involvement. I know they've always kind of worked with the ARCA Menards Series, but taking it over and the way they're developing everything, and the Sioux Chief Showdown plan that they have come with. A lot of drivers, if they're too young and cannot run the entire season based on the bigger tracks, the Sioux Chief Showdown kind of gives them a championship they can run after, and it's open to the East and the West as well, so we get to see a lot of different competition within that. So I think that just adds another element, and it is for the drivers. I mean, it benefits the drivers, again, the younger developing drivers.
Without a doubt. Now, our guest is here, Jay, so I'm going to bring her into the queue, and we'll go ahead and get started. And, Sarah, let me start off first by saying thanks so much for stepping in tonight and being on our show. We really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on.
Well, Sarah, I was very excited when I found out that you were going to be on the show tonight because you and BMI Racing are the very first mother-daughter racing team. And that has to be kind of an exciting endeavor for you to be the first to do that.
Definitely exciting, very different. My mama and I, we work really hard for what we do. So I love having her as my crew chief and as my mom at the racetrack.
Exactly. And the BMI Racing is managed by your mom too, is that right? By you and your mom?
Yeah, she's definitely the manager of the team also. She's taught me so much between driving and also sponsorship, and she does work really hard for us to get to the next race.
And the fact that she's your crew chief, too, that is just amazing. So I love seeing that in our sport, and I'm just going to say we've got with us tonight the co-host of the show, and that is Jay Huseman. I'm going to pass the baton over to him. I know he's got a couple of questions for you as well.
Okay.
Jay?
Well, first off, I want to say too, it's great to have you on. Talk about getting this deal together to run the full Arca Menards West Series here with the sponsor that you've brought together. Talk about putting that package together.
So, yeah, we wanted to, like, definitely do the full series for the whole year just because that's usually, like, how we like to race is by doing the full season. So we were like, okay, we definitely need to get the money in, and we also need to buy a car because last year we rented a car from Bill McAnally, and it was a gift from him. He's like, you can have it for the year, just take care of it. And when it came to this year, we wanted a better car, so we're like, okay, we'll buy our own car. And it was pretty tough because we had to, like, keep it at a low budget. And we finally found one, and it was in North Carolina. So as a family, we went there, checked out the car, and we're like, you know what, this is a really good buy for the price, and we got it. So it's like we rounded up our money from our sponsorships, and we just made it work. We met our minimum budget. And we're pretty comfortable of where we are. So we're excited for what this year holds.
Well, you touched on something there that I wanted to get into of, from what we have seen, generally speaking, a driver that comes from a self-owned or family-owned team such as yours has more respect for the car, if you will, of protecting it. You know, again, if you're on a limited budget, you were talking about the budget, you know you're on a budget of protecting the car, protecting you know, all that. So talk about that as far as that experience of knowing that versus driving for a team where, you know, a powerhouse, Hendrick Motorsports, I'll just say, there's unlimited, or not unlimited, but obviously more than resources than what you have.
Yeah. You know, it's funny you say that. We're talking to someone, I forgot who, but, like, they kind of asked, like, oh, do you have a backup car for this year? I was like, nope. But then I just started laughing. It's like, this is what I got. I only have one car, and it's just for road course and oval. So I make it work, and as a team, we make it work, I should say. And yeah, I definitely do have a lot of respect for the car because I know if I crash it, I am the one that's going to be fixing it along with my dad. My dad and I are at the shop every day, like, working, getting to the next race. So I have so much respect for the car. I don't want to, like, hurt it, but at the same time, I do drive it as hard as I can. For every pass I made at Phoenix, Arizona this year, I did not get one scratch in the car. I did not touch anyone. I did not touch the wall. I'm pretty sure I came close to the wall a few times. I was getting a bit too comfortable, but I did not, like, there is not a scratch on that car. And I was pretty proud of that because in the blue car from last year from Bill McAnally, I didn't exactly get to practice passing anyone because it just wasn't a car to pass anyone. But with that car, I was really excited and just passing people, not touching anyone, keeping it clean, but still driving people really hard. And that's what I enjoy.
Well, and that's the next question I had was about your race at Phoenix there. You had problems about midway through, I believe it was a fuel pump or issue, but you brought the car back out just to get the laps, the experience. You couldn't, I think you maybe moved up, what, two spots in the end, but to come out and just get those laps and experience, again, while taking care of the car, that
yeah.
shows that kind of a drive and motivation. So just talk about that that part of the race, if you will.
So that was, I was really bummed out about that because literally I was just about to go on the radio and, you know, thank my team, my parents and my team for the amazing car that we had put together. And then, like, it just starts cutting out and I'm like, you know, I got oil pressure, my temperatures are fine. And then my fuel pressure gauge starts flashing. I was like, dang it, what's going on here? I pulled it in and I'm already on the radio and I was coming around turns 3 and 4. I'm on the radio to my dad, actually. I was like, I have no fuel pressure. I have to come in. And, it started to come back and then it just kept shutting off. So I pulled in and, we got it sorted out. And the reason why I was bummed out is just because I started 24th out of 30 cars and I was working over 17th place. And when that happened, I was then put 32 laps down, which the reason why I did go back out is because I bought the tires and I didn't think it was like worth just saying, oh, you know what, I'm done for the day. I thought the seat time was worth it. Learning the track more, cause I know I'm going to go back there in the future. So I just went back out there for the seat time, passing people for practice. And yeah, I enjoyed that.
Well, and there again, I think drivers do learn that. Again, if you can learn to handle an ill-handling car or you know you're not competitive, the respect given on the track, and I think that does earn you a lot from the other drivers as well, you know, seeing that drive, that determination, but also the respect you showed on the track in those laps while you are, whatever you said, 32 laps down. So I think you accomplished a lot of things there by coming back out.
Yeah, I agree. I'm definitely glad I didn't give up on that night because I was so happy. Like, even though I was put 32 laps down, I finished 22nd and, you know, again, not a scratch in the car. So I was disappointed, but at the same time, I was happy I got to drive my new car on track. So overall, I think it was a pretty good weekend.
All right. Well, I'm going to turn it back over to Sharon, and hopefully we'll be reviewing all the races for the ARCA Menards West, and hopefully we can have you on again later on here in the season.
Thank you.
Okay, Bridget. Again, I'm very happy to see that you're here with us tonight. And we're talking a lot about the family because it's yourself, it's your mother, which I'm sorry, I think I called you Sarah earlier. But I heard you also mention your dad. So talk a little bit about the challenges. Is it challenging working that closely together as a family? Because you're together a lot, I'm sure, with racing. So what are some of the challenges? I know that families play an important role in the success of any race car driver, but this is unique.
Yeah, it definitely has its moments, like it has its highs and lows. Like just before the Phoenix race, you know, it was a bit of a struggle because my mom was stressed, my dad was stressed, and I was stressed, so we're being a bit harsh on each other a bit sometimes, but like we managed to get through it. Even at our like lowest moments, we know that it will be worth it when we get to the race, so... I think it's also, my dad and I, we're pretty stubborn, so we don't take no for an answer, which is, it's funny at times, but, it has its moments. So we work together and, it's funny cause it's like, we all go to the track and we do our job and then we all come home. So, I would say it has its moments and sometimes we just need our own space and we respect that, but we're a team and we're a family and we get through it.
Absolutely. And I think because you are a family, you get through it. But I think it also helps develop some thick skin. So I think it's great that you guys are all working together. And you're going to be racing the rest of the ARCA West schedule. Is that correct?
Yes, the full ARCA West schedule.
Okay. When you're looking at that schedule, I know you've got to be looking forward to any races at Utah Motorsports Park, that's your home track. But what other races are you looking forward to on the schedule?
For ARCA, I'm looking forward to Portland and Sonoma because they're both road courses. And I've never raced at those tracks. So I've been studying them a lot lately, just watching old races from them, whether it's with Cup or ARCA. So I know that ARCA once went to Portland like a while back, like a long time ago. So I'm excited for those ones.
I'm sure you are. And I know Utah's not on the schedule this year, so you've got to be disappointed with that because it's been on the schedule the last couple of years.
Yeah, so Utah Motorsports Campus was put on the schedule last year, but unfortunately I did miss that race just because I didn't have a car ready, which I was extremely bummed out about. I was sitting in the top tower on the French straightaway by myself, and I just felt pretty disappointed just because it's my favorite track, and I felt like I would have had the most advantage there because I'm on that track every week just driving something for seat time. So it is what it is with that one. Hopefully someday it will come back to Utah Motorsports Campus.
Yeah, I hope they do. I really do. I enjoyed the doubleheader there. Now, you raced at Phoenix, and Phoenix is going to be the season finale this year. Was there anything that you learned from your experience at Phoenix this past weekend that you're going to be able to use at the season finale?
I learned a lot from the first time with just the speed of the track. I think next time I go there, I'm definitely going to get on the throttle and play with it much more than what I did last time. And also, I always like testing how close I can get to the wall just to open up the entries on my corners. So I would say, yeah, opening up my corners and also playing with the gas a bit more sooner when I'm in the corners.
Okay, and I suppose a lot of that comes with having the confidence in the track, and the more you race it, the more confidence you get.
Yes, going there at the end of the year, I will be very excited because that will be my third time at that track. And every time I get experience in the track, I just get more excited to go to it the next time. So I'm really happy about that.
Okay. Well, we're real excited that you are racing in the ARCA Menards Series for the West this year. I know you've had some selected races with Bill McAnally Racing last year, and this year you're working with your own team, and that's exciting. Anytime we bring a new team into the series, it's an exciting event, and I'm really wishing you all the best as the season progresses. What do you do when you're not racing in the ARCA West, though? What other racing are you involved with?
So just this year, I've now entered into the NASA Spec Miata class. Mainly started off because there was a discussion between me and someone else about doing some open wheel racing, and I was super excited for that. It was Pro Formula Mazda, and I drove the car on track, and I loved it. Unfortunately, it wouldn't fit in my schedule for it to be worth my time. So we decided to stick with Spec Miata because I'll be driving that at Sonoma, and it's just for seat time mainly. So I'm really excited to get into that. It's very slow compared to the NASCAR or ARCA car, I should say. But I think it's really fun because I get to learn more about momentum just because they have little horsepower. So I'm really excited for that. And if I could get into anything else this year, if I have any more opportunities, I'll definitely take it.
Okay. Well, that's exciting, Bridget. And again, We hope that this isn't the last time we get a chance to visit with you. We hope to have you back on the show sometime throughout the season. And we've really enjoyed having the conversation with you here today.
Thank you for having me.
Okay. Well, thank you. And I hope you have a good rest of your evening. And good luck to you with the next race.
Thank you.
Okay. Goodbye. All right, that is Bridget Burgess, and she is racing with BMI Racing, a mother-daughter team in the ARCA West Series this year, and that was a lot of fun to get to know a little bit more about her, Jay.
Well, and one thing again, when you ask the question of what tracks are you looking forward to, normally a driver circles ones that they've got the experience on, they're good at, they know they can win at. She picked road courses, which she said she had never been to. That tells you what kind of drive, determination, she used the word stubborn with her and her dad. I mean, that kind of determination of, hey, this is an unknown, I'm going to go get it.
Exactly. I like that spirit. And, as a female race car driver, you kind of have to have that kind of spirit that whatever it is out there, I'm going to go after it. And I like the fact that she's getting some seat time on the track to kind of get to know it before she gets there to race with the ARCA Menards Series. Really great interview with Bridget Burgess, getting to know her, and I can't wait to see what happens in the next ARCA race, which, by the way, just again, I know we already mentioned the ARCA Menards Series racing, the ARCA West racing at Sonoma Raceway. That race is on June the 5th at 5 p.m. Eastern Time. You'll be able to watch it on NBC Gold Track Pass. And then the delayed broadcast is Wednesday, June the 9th. At 4 p.m. Eastern Time. So you want to make sure you set your DVRs to catch those races and watch Bridget Burgess as she races at Sonoma Raceway. Jay, I really appreciate you catching that. I had it right on the promotion pieces, but I guess because I was reading the some of the press release information that came out, that was sent to us by Sarah Burgess. So somehow I picked up Sarah's name and used that instead of Bridget's name when I put out the social media promo. So and then I called her Sarah Burgess. So I apologize for that to everybody, and especially to Bridget. We talked with Bridget Burgess here tonight.
Well, and that's why I said I was trying to find the info. I had read it earlier in the day, and that's why I was like, maybe I was off, and that's why before you turned it over to me, and that's as you turned it over, I was like, okay.
So that was my mistake, and I apologize for it. So with that, Jay, I do want to get into, and this is something that I don't know if you've been with Sal and I for a while, you know that he likes to talk, he likes to talk about the Southwest, the FRL Southwest Tour, but especially about the 2021 Winter Showdown. So this one's for you, Sal, in case you're listening. We are going to do a preview of the FRL Winter Showdown that's taking place this weekend out at Kern County Raceway. So it'll be on March the 20th, and that's the Spears Modified. They're going to participate in their Spears Manufacturing Winter Showdown 60. It is the sixth annual Winter Showdown 150. So, again, I'm very excited that this is taking place. So that's two different events. There's going to be the Winter Showdown with the 150. That's the late models. And then there's going to be the Spears Manufacturing Winter Showdown 60 with the Spears Modifieds. So the Spears Modified will have that $2,500 payday. So the 150 will have a $5,000 payday, and they're going to kind of break it up, which makes it kind of unique, Sal, if you want to cover that up. Because
well,
it's actually more than $5,000.
Yeah, and you mentioned Sal there. Hopefully, I know he's still recovering from his surgery. Hopefully this does lift his spirits as he's recovering. I'm sure he would have liked to have been the one to help do the preview for this. But they do have a unique format. The showdown for the super late models will see 150 laps of competition with a halfway break at lap 75. Now, half the purse will be awarded at that juncture, but the championship points are not awarded until the completion of lap 150, or another $5,000 will be paid to the leader at both lap 75 and then lap 150 for a possible $10,000 payday. Whoa. Now I got to find my spot.
Mm-hmm.
I scrolled down too far. Okay, so $10,000 payday. Single car qualifying will be followed by 3 8-lap qualifying heat races to set the starting lineup for the feature event. The top 8 cars in qualifying will then draw for position in their heat race, then race for their opportunity to sit on the pole for the prestigious event. The remaining cars will be split into odd and even heat races to set the remainder of the field. Oh, did I go into – okay. The Spears Modified Series, that'll be set through qualifying with the 60-lap main event starting the feature action at 2 p.m. Pacific time. Also the Kern County Superstocks will also join the action and lead off there earlier in the day at 12:45 p.m. Pacific time.
Okay. So, and this is really good news, especially out in the West. They've been on lockdown with the pandemic, and fans are going to be allowed to purchase a fan pass at this weekend's event at Kern County Raceway. They can get that at the Boxma office. Admission gates are going to open at 11 a.m. Pacific time. So how exciting is that, that the fans are back at the track? That's huge. Also, broadcast for those unable to attend the event is going to be aired live at spearsracing.tv. So you'll be able to watch this race live at that website, and it'll also be available on a delayed basis on MAV-TV and Motorsports Network. So check the local listings for when that airs on those two networks. But you will be able to watch the live action. Again, I'm going to repeat that, at spearsracing.tv. So that's pretty exciting as well.
That is. And like you mentioned, this on the West Coast for sure, a big late model event starting to rival and get noticed just as the Snowball Derby here in Pensacola. And with that, one of the previous winners, the only actual previous winner, showdown winner currently entered, is Derek Thorne. Thorne was the victor back in 2017. But as a total, there'll be 28 Spears SRL Southwest Tour Series super late models entered for this weekend's actions, 6 states represented on the roster. And it looks like 23 Spears Modifieds are also entered for their event, representing 4 states.
Okay, and there's some hot drivers to watch this weekend, including Preston Peltier. We've had him on our show here. He's looking for his second Spears SRL Southwest Tour Series victory in a row. He won last year the Sunrise Ford All-Star Showdown 200 at Irwindale Speedway worth $30,000. Peltier has winner showdown finishes of 5th, 13th, 7th, 21st, and 3rd. But there's a couple of other hot drivers to watch this weekend, Jay.
Yeah, the hot one number 2, that would be Jeremy Doss, and he'll enter his first Spears Modified Series winner showdown event. Doss is coming off a win in the season opener, which is predicated by 3 previous Modified Series wins in a row. He also scored the first 2 Spears Pro Late Model Series victories of the season, worth $22,500 combined. Doss will look for his 5th Kern County Raceway Touring Series victory, after securing 3 in the modifieds and a single win in the Spear Southwest Tour Series. So a lot of top-notch action going to be happening here.
Yes, I am looking forward to it. In fact, you know, Kern County Raceway is located in Bakersfield, and there's some local drivers that are going to be participating. Bakersfield Buddy Shepherd was the pole winner in 2018's version of the Showdown, and he also ran a perfect season in the track's NASCAR late model division in 2016, winning all 9 feature events. Now, he's going to be one to watch after commencing his Spears SRL Southwest Tour Series Rookie of the Year effort with a 4th place finish last year in the Sunrise Ford All-Star Showdown. But there's some other drivers that are going to be crossing the country to get here.
Well, and this is one of those drivers we talk about having that experience across the board. Cale Kanke will participate in his sport mod at the Dirt Track Nationals at Bristol Motor Speedway Friday night, then make his way to Kern County Raceway Saturday morning to qualify for the Winter Showdown in his super late model. Kane is making the effort and hopes of running the full 2021 SRL season. And that ability, that tells you the ability of a driver that can jump from dirt to asphalt in the same weekend.
Yes, indeed. Now, this next driver I'm going to talk about, you'll recognize because he's racing in ARCA this year. It's the 2019 Spears SRL champion, Cole Moore, is teaming up with Robbins White Racing to take part in the 2021 Winter Showdown. Lenny White and Cole Moore battled down to the last event in 2019, with Moore pulling out a slim 10-point victory in the championship. Moore is taking the wheel of the Hamke, formerly Rowdy Manufacturing chassis, that White drove to the runner-up finish in 2019. Moore is also the teammate to his father, John Moore, who's racing with Robbins White Racing this season. So you've got a father-son duo racing this weekend.
Well, we take a quick look at the history of the event. Go back to 2015, where the event originated, paying $25,000 to win in the super late model event. Talk about crossing the country. Bubba Pollard came from Senoia, Georgia, to take that inaugural event, fending off Derek Thorne and then Dalton Sargent to score that rich win. Thorne had led a race high 145 of the 250 laps that make up the event, only to come home third. And then Blaine Rocha and Preston Peltier, you mentioned, rounded out the top 5, where 53 cars were attending. Derek Thorne set fast time, and Dylan Capello was the winner of the modified feature, which at that time had had 16 entrants.
Okay, we'll take a look at a year-by-year history here. In 2016, the second running of the Winter Showdown found 43 cars in the pit area. Bubba Pollard was once again the victor, earning $25,000 after Derek Thorne broke a rear end while leading on lap 72. David Mayhew and Grayson Raz took turns at the front before Pollard pulled away for the win. Now, Raz and teammate Noah Gregson, another name you're familiar with, made news after colliding and eliminating Raz. That sounds like a familiar story. Parker Stevens finished second with Jeremy Doss, Tyler Tanner, and a recovering Noah Gregson, rounding out the top 5. Derek Thorne once again set a fast time over the field. Ryan Partridge scored the victory in the 80-lap modified feature over the 25-car field. Austin Barnes was second, followed by Taylor Minch and Travis Thurkettle and Matthew Hicks. So that is what happened in 2016 at the Winter Showdown.
Well, and we want to bring some good news to it for 2017. After coming close in 15 and sporting the fastest car in 16, Derek Thorne finally able to score his first Winter Showdown victory, this one worth $30,000. Thorne dominated, won in dominating fashion, leading all 250 laps to score the victory over Donnie Wilson, Kyle Busch, Eric Jones, and Willie Allen. Thorne again had set fast time for the third consecutive event in over a 47-car entry. For Thorne, it was a breakthrough event, though, long time in the making as we've looked at his history at the track. Now, in the modifieds, it was Austin Barnes scoring the victory over a 22-car field, followed by Scott Winters, Ryan Partridge, Jason Irwin, and Travis Thurkettle.
Okay, in 2018, for the first time in Winter Showdown history, Derek Thorne did not set the fast time for the event. Fellow Bakersfield, California competitor Buddy Shepard did the honors, garnering the extra $2,000 bonus. Two-time NASCAR Cup Series champion Kyle Busch had the last lap, though, because he scored the $30,000 win over the 48-car field. Thornton led 72 laps that faded on the long runs, allowing Busch to lead the other 228 laps in the now 300-lap event. Buddy Shepard won a thrilling battle over Daniel Hemric in the closing laps to finish as runner-up, and Hemric was third, followed by Ty Majeski and Noah Gregson. The modifieds were not scheduled in the 2018 edition of the showdown. So we hear some really familiar names in that year. That tells you how much notoriety this event has gotten.
It most certainly has. In 2019, we had a little bit of threatening weather forecast throughout the weekend, so some last-minute dropouts cut the entry field to 38 super late models, with 37 surviving to start the 300-lap event. Rain did interrupt Friday's qualifying day, so the lineup was set based off of a combined practice session, which means Jeremy Doss earned the pole and led the most laps in the event. Doss battled up Preston Peltier and Ty Majeski for the win before the race was called due to a power outage in the area. Ironically, only after a few minutes after Majeski was declared the winner, the power was restored. Now, they only completed 177 of the 300 laps. Derek Thorne was in the runner-up position, followed by Preston Peltier, Willie Allen, and Ryan Reed. Many of the top competitors were taken out of the event in a huge lap 115 restart that involved nearly half the field. Back on the schedule, the Spheres modified. Trevor Cristani scored his first showdown win over a 19-car field, while Kyle Telstrom came home second, with Ryan Shitaru, Dylan Capello, and Justin Johnson rounding out the top five.
That brings us to 2020. And unfortunately, because of the COVID-19 pandemic, the Winter Showdown was not held that year. It hit only a week before the scheduled race date last year. So that means that this 2021 version is something that a lot of fans are definitely looking forward to finally taking place. And an old friend of ours, Dylan Lupton, is going to be in that race in the number four. But I'm trying to see Cole Raz, the younger brother of Grayson Raz, is on the entry list here, as is Buddy Shepard. You heard us mention him a few times. John Moore and Cale Kanke. We mentioned both of those drivers. Derek Thorne is back, so that's bad news for all the competitors. Dean Thompson, we've had him on the show earlier this year. He's racing in the Arca Menards Series. Carlos Tierra has also been on our show, and Preston Peltier. Christian McGee was on earlier this year. He's going to be in this event. Austin Thorne is also racing, and Cole Moore, which we talked about along with Blaine Rocha. There's a bunch of other people that we didn't mention. But this is going to be very exciting, Jay.
It is, and I know that with the way, looking at a normal schedule, we would have been doing part of the West Coast swing at the NASCAR Cup level, and so that's why some of those names you saw were out in that area for their series, the Cup level. The way it played out this year, they're not overlapping like that. But again,
right.
Any kind of news like that, you get the positive. This is where other drivers can make their name, and it will become a household name by the time we do another five-year review down the road.
Yes, indeed. All right. We are now going to start our review, a preview of the Camping World Truck Series, and they are racing the Freight Auctions 200 at Atlanta Motor Speedway this Saturday, March the 20th at 2:30 p.m. Eastern Time. Now, it will be televised on Fox Sports 1 with pre-race coverage starting at 1:30 p.m. Eastern and radio coverage on MRN and SiriusXM NASCAR Radio. They're racing a distance of 200.02 miles over 130 laps, and the first two stages are 30 laps each, with stage two ending on lap 60 and the final stage ending on the last lap, lap 130. So let's go over the rookie update real quick.
All right. Well, not much change there atop the board following the third race that was at Las Vegas Motor Speedway 2 weeks ago. Chandler Smith continues to lead over Carson Horsevoort by a significant points total following the trio of opening races in the Camping World Truck Series. Smith was the highest finishing rookie contender for the second week in a row, finishing 19th there at Vegas. Horsevoort was 24th. Shakeup, though, was down further in the standings. Chase Purdy and Chris Wright moved up past Haley Deegan into third and fourth respectively, coming on the heels of the 23rd place finish by Purdy and Wright 25th. Deegan ended up with a 28th place result. So Chandler Smith currently sits at 90 points with two awards, Hosovar 68 points, one award, and then Purdy, Wright, and Haley Deegan at 39, 37, and 35.
Okay, and this is the contest really is third through fifth, and those guys are separated by just those 4 points, and it's going to bounce all over the place as the season progresses. Okay,
Certainly think so. Yeah.
Okay, next up is John Hunter Nemechek. He gambles on himself, and it pays off at Las Vegas. He's the most recent winner. But during the offseason, John Hunter Nemechek surprised many people when he announced that he was returning to the Camping World Truck Series after his first full-time year in the Cup Series competition. His reason for pairing up with Kyle Busch Motorsports for the 2021 season was clear. It was because he wanted to win. Well, guess what? He accomplished that mission. 2 weeks ago, Nemechek led his truck owner across the line to win his first of the season at Las Vegas Motor Speedway. It was his seventh overall victory of the series, and it was his first Camping World Truck Series victory since the spring Martinsville race in 2018. The win also marks the first for Nemechek for a team other than Nemco Motorsports, which is owned by his dad, Joe. But the Vegas celebration still had a strong family connection as the Nemechek became the very first father-son pairing to win at Las Vegas Motor Speedway. Joe won the Xfinity Series race there in 2003. Now, with the series now heading to Atlanta Motor Speedway this Saturday for the Freight Auctions 200, Nemechek has to feel pretty confident that he can continue to win. Excuse me. His first two career wins came on 1.5-mile tracks, including the 2016 victory at, just where, Atlanta. It was the second race of the season. The win at Las Vegas brought an additional early season accolade to Nemechek. He took over the series points lead from Ben Rhodes and now holds a 14-point advantage over the driver who won the very first two races so far this season. Now, next up we have Bill Lester, and I want to just mention, Jay, we had him on the show on Monday night, and you were there. I really enjoyed the interview that we had with him, and if you haven't listen to that, I would really encourage everybody to go back and take a listen. The interview with Bill Lister starts at the second half hour of the show.
Yeah, most certainly you want to go back and listen to it. A great interview with Bill Lister as he joins the field here in Atlanta. He made his first of two NASCAR Cup Series starts at Atlanta Motor Speedway back in 2006, and now 15 years later returns to the scene to race the number 17 Ford team for DGR this weekend. When Lister took the green flag that year, he was the first black driver to race in the Cup Series in nearly 20 years since Willie T. Ribbs did in 1986. While he made just the two starts in his career, he did race 142 NASCAR Camping World Truck Series races between 2000 and 2007, notching a trio of poles, two top fives, and seven top tens. Now, part of the Lester's motivation to return to the grid came from the recent publication of his book, Winning in Reverse, Defying the Odds and Achieving Dreams, that he wrote with Jonathan Ingram. And we talked about that on Monday night. Definitely worth the read. Lester will start 31st this weekend.
Yeah, and he came out with an announcement today, Jay, that the book is now available as an Audible book. So fans can go over to Amazon.com and look up his book, again, Winning in Reverse, Defying the Odds and Achieving Dreams, and they can get that Audible version available just today. So it's pretty exciting that it came out the day before he starts to race in this truck series again.
Yeah, that's awesome. I know he was talking about some of the things he had in the works on Monday night. That must have been one of them.
Yes, and I know these things don't just come; they don't just happen. They involve a lot of work, as you know. My son is an author, and I've been through a lot with him, and I know how hard it is to make these kind of things happen. So, congratulations to Bill Lester on his book. Okay, now Toyota's going to lead the field to green for Saturday's race. After the 1-2 finish 2 weeks ago at Las Vegas, Kyle Busch Motorsports Toyotas are going to lead the field to green this Saturday, and John Hunter Nemechek starts on the pole with Kyle Busch starting in second. And after the dominant performance in Las Vegas, Toyotas will occupy the next two rows as well, with Matt Crafton from ThorSport Racing and Stuart Friesen with Halmar Friesen Racing. They're going to be starting in third and fourth, respectively. And then guess what? There's two more Toyota drivers with Ben Rhodes from ThorSport Racing and Austin Hill with Hattori Racing Enterprise holding down the third role. Now, 2 weeks ago, Toyota Tundra Trucks took the top five positions in the NASCAR Camping World Truck Series at Las Vegas Motor Speedway, and they did it with four different teams. Kyle Busch Motorsports took the top two positions with Nemechek winning while the team's namesake, Kyle Busch, finished in second place. Hattori Racing Enterprises driver Austin Hill was third, and Halmar Friesen Racing Stuart Friesen finished in fourth place. ThorSport Racing's Matt Crafton finished in fifth place. So Toyota actually ended up bookending the top 10 because Christian Ecke finished in ninth place and Rhodes in 10th, both of those drivers from ThorSport Racing. So the balance of the top 10 was filled by Chevrolets, including Zane Smith with GMS Racing finishing sixth, Grant Infinger's spot start with CR7 Motorsports netted a seventh place finish, and Parker Kligerman's first start of the season landed him in eighth place with a Henderson Motorsports truck. So pretty strong finishes there for Toyota Racing.
Well, I got a couple of thoughts there. One, I want to take a look at my fantasy pick there to see if I picked a Toyota. The other would be whether or not Kyle Busch says, hey, this time 1-2, I want to be the one driver, not the second one.
Yes. Okay.
Now, the Atlanta field will be packed with previous winners. of the six different race winners at Atlanta since the 2000 or since the NASCAR Camping World Truck Series returned to the 1.5 mile circuit in 2015. They had a 2-year break there. Five of them are in the field for this Saturday's Freight Auctions 200. Grant Enfinger won it in 2020, Kyle Busch in 2019, Brett Moffitt in 2018, John Hunter Nemechek in 16, and Matt Crafton in 15 are all looking to capture that checkered flag once again in Georgia. The only winner from that span not entered in the race is Christopher Bell, who was the 2017 winner. Of those, Busch is the only driver to have won multiple races at Atlanta, five total actually, as a matter of fact, and Nemechek has won thus far in 2021, that most recent race there in Las Vegas. Now, Crafton leads the pack of previous winners and all active Camping World Truck Series drivers overall in the top 10 finishes at Atlanta with 10. Busch trails with 9 top 10s, but leads all with 8 top 5, all drivers with 8 top 5 finish results. Busch also has led the most laps at 516, while it's Crafton has led 184. A Moffitt, with only 2 laps led, may win the award for the most efficient use of his time getting to a win in Atlanta. Nemechek slightly trails him slightly with 8 laps led.
Okay. Well, we've got a little bit of time here, Jay. Do you want to give our race-winning picks for the fantasy group with Tampa Racing?
All right. Let's see if that'll pull up quickly here on our chart. All right, for the Truck Series, Andy has Ross Chastain, James has Sheldon Creed, I have one of those, Grant Enfinger, Mike has Chandler Smith, Owen has Johnny Sauter, Sam has Stuart Friesen, looks like Sharon, you have the favorite there with Kyle Busch, and then Tommy has John Hunter Nemechek.
Okay, so those are all really good picks. It is going to be fun to see what happens. I think fans will definitely want to tune in for this one. Again, that race is taking place tomorrow night at Atlanta Motor Speedway. I'm sorry, it's taking place Saturday afternoon at Atlanta Motor Speedway at 2:30 p.m. Eastern Time on Fox Sports 1. Next up, we have the NASCAR Xfinity Series. Do we have a quick minute to give the picks in the Xfinity Series, Jay?
All right. We'll start with that then here before we get into it. Andy took Martin Truex Jr. is making a surprise start there. James has Justin Allgaier. I'm sticking with it. Break the streak of bad finishes, Noah Gregson. Mike has Brett Moffitt. Owen had Harrison Burton. Sam, Riley Herbst, Sharon has Austin Cindric, and Tommy has A.J. Allmendinger. It looks like you kind of got the odds-on favorite there again, huh? He could be in trouble.
I need a good weekend to catch up here.
Well, hey, okay. I had first pick at all these races, so I'm trying to figure out what I did wrong.
Well, we'll see. I was surprised that I was the fourth pick, and I was surprised that Austin Cindric was still available. I had to take a double take on that one. So I was like, oh, man, I'm jumping on that. Okay. But Martin Truex is going to be one to watch for sure, too. So Andy got that one. He was a late entry, and I did miss that, so... Okay, let's go ahead and move on to the NASCAR Xfinity Series. The Echo Park 250 at Atlanta Motor Speedway again on Saturday. So we've got a doubleheader on Saturday, March the 20th at 5 p.m. Eastern Time. The pre-race coverage starts at 4:30 p.m. Eastern on Fox Sports 1. Radio coverage will be on PRN and SiriusXM NASCAR Radio. Now, they're going to be racing a distance of 251.02 miles, over 163 laps, and their stages, first two stages, are 40 laps apiece, with the second stage ending on lap 80. The final stage, of course, ends on the last lap, lap 163. So we've got quite a few notes here to start off with in the Xfinity series.
Well, the first one is RCR. They've partnered with Alsco Uniforms in 21 as they've renewed their sponsorship. Richard Childress Racing and Alsco Uniforms teaming up. Along with Tyler Reddick's number 8 NASCAR Cup Series Chevrolet, Alsco will be on the number 2 Chevrolet driven by Myatt Schneider here in the Xfinity Series. Alsco will be featured as the primary partner on Schneider's car as well as full-season associate partner for both cars.
Oh, that is awesome to hear. Also, here's a few Goodyear fast facts. For the sixth race of the Xfinity Series season, the tire utilized is going to be the Goodyear Eagle Speedway radials. Xfinity will have 5 sets for the race, and it will be the same tire setup that they used last season. Now, the right side tire is a multi-zone tread tire with 2 different tread compounds on the same tire. The worn asphalt surface of Atlanta Motor Speedway, as we all know, is very abrasive, and it continues to make for some really exciting racing and strategy. Driving style will also come into play because of the way that the track wears on the tires. So tire strategy can make or break a team this weekend at Atlanta.
Atlanta is definitely all about tire wear for sure. Now on the for the Xfinity Series, the Sunoco Rookie of the Year update, Ty Gibbs took back the standings lead for the Xfinity Series with authority as he finished second. Now Gibbs has 88 points and 2 awards. Josh Berry is second in the standings there with 75 points, and Ryan Vargas is third with 54. Wonder if that's why Josh Berry had up 2 fingers, because he was second in the standings.
Oh, probably. that could be. Okay, now we mentioned this a little bit earlier that Martin Truex Jr. is taking on Atlanta in the Xfinity Series. Now, last weekend, the Cup Series winner at Phoenix will be hitting the racetrack this weekend at Atlanta Motor Speedway behind the wheel of the number 54 Toyota for Joe Gibbs Racing in the Xfinity Series. Now, Truex competed in the Xfinity Series for 103 races starting in 2001 and until 2010. He has not raced in the series since the season finale at Homestead Miami Speedway in that year of 2010. Of his 103 Xfinity Series starts, Truex has 13 wins, 40 top fives, and 61 top 10s, well, along with 10 pole awards. He's led 1,863 laps and has an average start of 9.2 with an average finish of 11.4. Maybe that's why he's one of my favorites. Saturday's race will be Truex's third race at the Georgia track in the Xfinity Series. The race was in 2004 when he started second. The first was in 2004 when he started second and finished ninth. Then in 2005, he started 16th and finished 11th. And this weekend, Truex will be starting from the 18th starting spot in Saturday's race.
Well, definitely in a good machine there, as that's the one Ty Gibbs took to the second place finish and his win. So he's in a good ride. But coming into their home turf with some momentum, you got Sieg and Jones. There are 2 drivers from Georgia entered into this weekend's NASCAR Xfinity Series race, the Echo Park 250, an extra revved up about racing at their home track, Atlanta Motor Speedway. That would be RSS Racing's Ryan Sieg from Tucker and Joe Gibbs Racing's Brandon Jones, who does hail right there from Atlanta. The 33-year-old driver Ryan Sieg and his family-owned organization, RSS Racing, are based in Tucker, Georgia, Sieg's hometown. The team is run by Ryan's father, Rod Sieg, and the duo have competed in the Xfinity Series now since 2013 when they made their series debut at Indianapolis Motor Speedway. Last season, Sieg had a career best season, racking up 7 top fives and 11 top tens, as well as a run at the championship title. This weekend, he'll head to Atlanta Motor Speedway for the 8th time in his career. He's completed 1,042 of the 1,173 laps attempted, which is 88.8%, and has an average start of 17.4, with an average finish of 21.3, with his best finish of 11th coming at the track in 2019. Because of his finish the last weekend at Phoenix Raceway, Sieg will start 35th on Saturday with the hopes of moving his way to the front of the pack. I mentioned Atlanta, Atlanta, Georgia's own Brandon Jones, driving for Joe Gibbs Racing, has had a strong start to his 2021 season. In the first 5 races of the season, he's posted 3 top fives, 3 top tens, and an average start of 11.0, and an average finish of 16.0 flat. Last weekend at Phoenix, didn't go as planned for the number 19, though, as they were involved in a crash that put them out of the race early. However, with each race at Atlanta, Jones has seen improvements. He'll be making his 6th start there on Saturday with 1 top 5 and 2 top 10s. And he goes into the weekend 7th in the series point standings, 61 points from the playoff cut line, and he will start 16th for the Echo Park 250 on Saturday. Take a quick look here at the playoff outlook already from following Phoenix. Austin Cindric in on wins. He's got 2 already. Allmendinger and Myatt Schneider also have wins and should be locked in on wins as long as we don't hit the cap of 12. Then you got Daniel Henrich. Let's see. He's got 108 points. Jeb Burton at 79. Harrison Burton, 69. Brandon Jones mentioned at 61. Justin Haley in 8th is at 56. Brandon Brown, 9th in the standings at 44 points up. Jeremy Clements, 41. And nearing the cut line, Justin Allgaier is only up 21 points, but he's got his season going back in the right direction, as does 12th spot Riley Herbst, who is now, and that says 58 points to the good. That can't be right. That's got to be like 18.
Okay. Next up, we'll talk about Brandon Brown, who is 9th in those series point standings. He's going to add to a very strong 2021 season start. Now, he left Phoenix Raceway with the best finish of his NASCAR Xfinity Series career, which was a third-place podium finish at that one-mile track. Until this past weekend, Brown's best finish in 90 starts was a fifth-place finish at Texas Motor Speedway just last year. In 2020 has been a career season to start out for the number 68 of Brandon Built Motorsports, a small family-owned team. In the season opener at Daytona, he finished 6th, and the following weekend on the road course at Daytona, he finished 8th. Homestead wasn't quite as good to Brown. He finished 34th in that race and was out of the race early because of an overheating issue. In Las Vegas, he finished 11th, and again last weekend at Phoenix, he finished 3rd. Brown and his team still have a handful of races without a sponsor, which is amazing when you think about how well he's been racing this season with his family-owned team, and we know how hard that is. Now, Brown finished 12th in the NASCAR Xfinity Series regular season finale last year, but he was able to clinch the final playoff spot based on his points. It was the first time he ever qualified for the playoffs, and it was also the first time for Brandon Built Motorsports in their 3rd full-time season as a team. Now, momentum will be on Brown's side this weekend as he heads to Atlanta Motor Speedway, coming off his 3rd-place finish. But at Atlanta, he has 3 starts at the Georgia track, and he's placed 23rd, and most recently, he finished 12th last year. So he seems to keep improving. So let's see what he can do this weekend at Atlanta Motor Speedway.
Well, we talked about it with the fantasy picks. Dude Perfect, as Sindrick is reaching new heights in performance. This weekend marked the second time in Austin Sindrick's relatively short career that he's had a perfect driver rating. The first time he accomplished it was at Mid-Ohio in 2019. This weekend also marked the 15th perfect driver rating for Team Penske in the NASCAR Xfinity Series. And perfect driver ratings are rare. They've only happened in the series 79 times, including last weekend, since the inception of loop data back in 2005. And I don't know what all the loop data categories that combine into that, but 30 races per year for 16 years, again, it's only happened 79 times. So Sindrick has done it twice now, Phoenix at last week and then Mid-Ohio in 2019. In 18, it was Joey Logano at Auto Club, Ryan Blaney at Texas. In 2015, it was Joey Logano at Bristol, Ryan Blaney at Iowa, and then Joey Logano at Phoenix. In 2014, Brad Keselowski did it at Las Vegas and Loudon. A.J. Allmendinger did it in Mid-Ohio and Road America in 2013, a pair of road courses, imagine that. And back in 2011 and 10, all four of those were Brad Keselowski, Chicago and Kansas in 11, Michigan and Richmond in 2010. So 15 of those 79 belong to Team Penske. That tells you something about their Xfinity Series program.
It definitely does. Okay, let's talk about Georgia On My Mind. The Xfinity Series is racing, will be racing the second day as the NASCAR Camping World Truck Series kicks off a doubleheader at 2:30 p.m. Eastern Time. As I mentioned earlier, the Xfinity Series is racing after that race at 5 p.m. Eastern on Fox Sports 1. Now, Austin Sindrick was victorious once again, this time at Phoenix Raceway, earning his second win in the opening five races this year. The driver of the number 22 Penske, Team Penske Ford, beat 18-year-old rookie Ty Gibbs by just 0.360 seconds on the final restart with two laps left. The win marked the second consecutive win on the Phoenix Oval for Sindrick, as he won there last November and route to being crowned the Xfinity Series 2020 champion. He led a race-high 119 of 200 laps, and he held off the field on three late restarts. So Gibbs, who finished second in the Xfinity race, started out the weekend at Phoenix with a win on Friday night in the Arkham Menards Series race. Brandon Brown finished third in the Xfinity race and claimed a career-best finish for his number 68 Brandon-built motorsports team. Riley Herbst was fourth, and A.J. Allmendinger rounds out the top five, but he had also won the previous weekend at Las Vegas. To round out the top 10, we have Jeb Burton, Bailey Curry, Justin Allgaier, Brett Moffitt, and Jeremy Clements. The finish actually marked for Curry his first top 10 finish in his Xfinity Series career. Now, this weekend, again, is going to be the 163 laps with two stages at 40 laps each and the last stage ending on the last lap. Now, Sindrick will start from the pole with Jeb Burton joining him on the front row. Allmendinger will be third, Brown will start fourth, and Harrison Burton will round out the top five. Allmendinger is the only current driver in the Xfinity Series with a previous win at Atlanta Motor Speedway, and it came just last season. He will look to get his second win this year and go back-to-back. I don't think any of us picked him, did we?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. Let's go ahead and get into the Cup Series, and hopefully we'll have time to get into our picks in the Cup Series as we transition over to Hot Topics.
Tommy has the dinger.
Tom, oh, he does have Dalmendinger. Okay, that's awesome.
Yep.
Okay, smart man. Okay, now the next race for the Truck Cup Series is the Folds of Honor Quick Trip 500 at Atlanta Motor Speedway on Sunday, March the 21st. The time is at 3 p.m. Eastern Time and will be televised on Fox with their pre-race coverage starting at 2:30 p.m. Eastern Time. Radio coverage is on PRN and SiriusXM NASCAR Radio. They'll be racing a distance of 500.5 miles over 325 laps. The first two stages are 105 laps each. The second stage ends on lap 210 and the last stage on the last lap, lap 325. I think I'm starting to lose my voice for some reason.
Well, we still got a ways to go because we also got hot topics, but... here for Atlanta, I want to talk about a couple of charities, and I now want to head to Atlanta this weekend, but Speedway Children's Charity is going to host laps for charity at Atlanta. AMS is inviting fans to take the first laps of the NASCAR race weekend and help children in need. The Speedway Children's Charities Atlanta is hosting laps for charity on Atlanta's famous 1.5-mile oval under the lights on Friday, March 19th. As part of the NASCAR weekend festivities. Participants will get to drive their personal vehicle onto the 24-degree bank turns and make three laps around the historic speedway. Proceeds will benefit the Atlanta chapter of Speedway Children's Charities and its ongoing mission to help the children in need. With a donation of $40 per vehicle, participants will drive three laps around the speedway. Gates will open for the event at 4:30 p.m., and donations for admission must be made online. Admission will be not be sold on site. Additionally, drivers will be required to complete a waiver and present it upon arrival. Seat belts must be worn by all participants. Attendees will access the event by entering through the infield of the service tunnel located just off of Richard Petty Boulevard and Lower Woosley Road. They'll follow the signage to check in. Throughout the event, the attendees will be required to remain inside their vehicles and observe guidelines for safety and social distancing. You can learn more about the laps for charities and to purchase the tickets for the event at speedwaycharities.org/event/Atlanta/laps for charity.
Okay, now we've mentioned this next one before, but just as a reminder or for those who maybe missed it, the Betty Jane France Humanitarian Award nominations are open. Now, nominations opened at the beginning of March for the NASCAR Foundation's 11th annual Betty Jane France Humanitarian Award. It's a recognition that honors philanthropic ideals and the vision of Betty Jane France, the NASCAR Foundation's late founder and chairperson. Now, the Foundation's Betty Jane France Humanitarian Award is presented every year to a NASCAR fan who is a dedicated volunteer working on behalf of children's causes. Since its inception, the award has given $1.8 million in donations to charities representing 40 finalists and impacting the lives of 354,647 children in need. The nomination process includes an independent selection committee of NASCAR's industry leaders who help identify the nominees to be voted on by the NASCAR Foundation's Board of Directors. The four finalists are ultimately selected by the board and set forth to an online fan vote every fall. Now, each finalist will be guaranteed a $25,000 donation to the children's charity that they represent, with the overall winner receiving a $100,000 donation. Nominations will close on Friday, March the 19th. That is tomorrow, folks. So the nomination form and award rules can be accessed online at nascarfoundation.org/award. Completed forms can then be submitted via email to BJF, think Betty Jane France, BJF Award@NASCARFoundation.org or via mail. So since this all closes tomorrow night, there is some sense of urgency to get that done. But we have some milestones to watch for, too.
Yeah, we have talked about them and said it on here before. Truex and Busch out front as they're racing to 10,000 laps led. These two drivers are looking to become the 19th and 20th different drivers all time in the NASCAR Cup Series to lead 10,000 laps in their career. Joe Gibbs Racing, Martin Truex Jr. currently has led 9,963 laps, just 37 shy of reaching the 10,000 lap led goal. Chip Ganassi's Kurt Busch is not far behind with Truex, 9,904 laps led, which is 96 laps shy of that mark. Now, on their jayski.com, there is a list of the top 20. I'm going to cover some of it here, though, to give you a perspective. Richard Petty is the all-time leader at 51,695 as these guys try to hit 10,000. Of the laps completed, 307,846. That's 16.80%, and he did it in 1,185 laps. Second is Cale Yarborough. I'll give you his percentage at 21.8. Allison, and that's quite a drop. Cale Yarborough dropped down to 31,000. Bobby Allison at 27,344 was 13.8%. Dale Earnhardt, 25,683 led, 12.7%. And David Pearson, this would be your top five, 25,159 at 18.6%. Now I'm going to scroll down to where we're looking at Martin Truex and give you his full stat line. 9,963 mentioned of 155,035, which is only a 6.40%, done it in 560 races. Kurt Busch at 9,904 out of 203,433 is a 4.9%, and he's done it in 731. Let's see, a couple more here. I wanted to hit the high. I think I saw was 20. The percentage-wise was 24.20. It belonged to Junior Johnson, 15th on the list, and only 313 races. Bobby Isaac, another one, 18.6, did it in only 309 races, leading 13,000. So interesting list there to look at. Again, you can check it out on jayski.com.
Okay, next up we're going to talk about Stuart Friesen racing the number 77 Spire Motorsports car in the Cup Series debut at Bristol on the Dirt. Now, Spire Motorsports announced this week that Stuart Friesen will drive this number 77 car on the dirt at Bristol Motor Speedway on March the 28th. With Hallmar International as the primary sponsor. The car will be adorned with Friesen's traditional Hallmar colors and will be prepared for competition by Spire and led by crew chief Kevin Bellicourt. Now, Friesen will have a full schedule on Bristol Dirt this spring. In addition to the NASCAR Cup Series Food City Dirt Race on March the 28th, Friesen is also competing in the NASCAR Camping World Penske's truck race on dirt on March the 27th. The World of Outlaws Late Model Series Bristol Bash on April the 9th and the 10th, and the Super Dirt Car Series Big Block Modifieds on April the 23rd and the 24th. So he's going to be a busy guy. Friesen, who also has over 330 career wins in dirt modified racing, won the last time the NASCAR Camping World Truck Series raced on dirt at Eldora Speedway in 2019. So he could be one to watch for, not this weekend, but next weekend's race at Bristol on the dirt.
All right, and the last note we got here, Jeff Foxworthy is going to bring the laughs to Atlanta Motor Speedway with the pre-race show. He's a Georgia native, and he's bringing his popular comedy act to Atlanta Motor Speedway with a pre-race performance on Sunday, March 21st. The fans in attendance for the folds of 400 Quick Trips Folds of Honor Quick Trip 500. We'll enjoy his Foxworthy's observations about the humor found in everyday life during his performance on the pre-race stage. Admission to Foxworthy's show is included with every Grandstand ticket for the Folds of Honor Quick Trip 500. Foxworthy is the largest selling comedian comedy recording artist in history, a multi-Grammy Award nominee, and best-selling author of more than 26 books. I did not know he had 26 books out.
Okay. Georgia native and series champion Chase Elliott returns home this weekend at Atlanta Motor Speedway. The 2020 NASCAR Cup Series champion and Hendrick Motorsports driver Chase Elliott is also had the opportunity to become the second driver in series history from the state of Georgia to win at Atlanta Motor Speedway, joining his father and NASCAR Hall of Famer Bill Elliott, also known as Austin Bill from Dawsonville, with 5 Atlanta Cup wins. Since the last time the Dawsonville, Georgia native, Chase Elliott, competed at Atlanta Motor Speedway, he went on to win the Cup Series title last year and claimed the Most Popular Driver of the Year award for the third consecutive season from 2018 to 2020. Now Elliott heads back to Atlanta, ranked 6th in the series driver standings after posting 2 top 5 finishes in the first 5 races this year. Elliott has made 5 starts at Atlanta, posting 1 top 5 and 4 top 10s. He finished 8th in the NASCAR Cup Series in Atlanta at the Atlanta race last year.
No, okay, sorry.
We got less than 3 minutes now.
Yeah. Why is that? Okay. Martin Truex grabs the first win at 2021, adds his name to the playoff and all-star list. Snapped a 29-race winless streak last weekend at Phoenix Raceway. Joe Gibbs Racing's Martin Truex put every cup competitor on notice for when they come back to the Valley of the Sun, where they'll settle the series championship in November. Truex not only locked himself into the postseason with the victory, but also added his name to the 2021 NASCAR All-Star Race, which will be at Texas Motor Speedway on June 13th. Truex joins fellow 2021 season winners, Front Row Motorsports' Michael McDowell from the Daytona 500, his Joe Gibbs Racing teammate Christopher Bell on the road course at Daytona, Hendrick Motorsports' William Byron from Homestead, Miami, and Kyle Larson at Las Vegas as the 5 drivers already with tickets to the playoffs. Now this weekend, the 2017 NASCAR Cup Series champion, Truex, is looking to keep his momentum rolling at Atlanta and, just like Phoenix, add to his wins list. Truex has made 22 starts at Atlanta, posting 5 top fives and 10 top tens, finished 3rd in the Cup Series Atlanta race last season.
Okay, now real quick, I'm just going to briefly tell you that Kevin Harvick is another driver to watch this weekend at Atlanta. Hopefully he'll bring the first victory for this season for Stewart Haas Racing. He is the defending winner of this race at Atlanta Motor Speedway, and right now he's tied with Kurt Busch for the most Cup Series wins at Atlanta Motor Speedway among active drivers, with 3 wins apiece. But he also could extend Ford's win streak at Atlanta this weekend, the longest consecutive win streak by a manufacturer in the Cup Series is 4 victories. Both Ford and Chevrolet have accomplished that feat on 3 different occasions. So definitely keep an eye on Kevin Harvick this weekend. He leads a lot of the stats in loop data categories. And also Denny Hamlin continues to hold the series points lead. And what else do we have? Oh, yeah, the streaking 5 different winners to start the 2021 season. We've got an article coming out from Jay on that, which is coming out tomorrow. And then of course, the Cup Series drivers are going to heat things up in the Peach State this weekend at Atlanta Motor Speedway. It is now 10 o'clock, and that means it is time for our NASCAR Hot Topic Sound Off. And joining us for our Hot Topic conversation tonight tonight is Tommy Kraft. So welcome to the show, Tommy.
Thanks for having me back.
Well, we're pleased to have you back. Unfortunately, we couldn't fill the other open seat tonight, but that only means that we either we're going to have more hot topics or more to say about the topics that we do bring up. But, Jay, before we do that, let me have you give our Cup Series picks for Atlanta Motor Speedway.
All right. For Atlanta, on the Cup Series, Andy took Chase Briscoe. James has one of the favorites of Kevin Harvick. I like to think Chase Elliott. My pick is also there. Mike took Kyle Larson. Owen has Joey Logano. Sam with Kurt Busch. Sharon has her favorite there, Martin Truex Jr. And Tommy there has Brad Keselowski. So that is our picks for that. And while you get started here, Sharon, I'm going to try and call back in. My phone's starting to act retarded, and I don't want to get kicked off later. So I'm going to try and call back in real quick now.
Oh, okay, I'll have Tommy start us off with the first topic then for tonight's conversation while you do that. Okay, Tommy, what are we going to talk about here tonight?
Talk about LeBron James being added as a partner of Fenway Sports Group.
Yeah, this is pretty exciting because we're seeing that happening more and more. In fact, there's also, I'm going to bring up also some other teams that are bringing on some exciting sponsors, if I can find it here real quick. Let me see if I can find it here real quick. I know that Lil Aaron for SS Greenlight Racing at Atlanta Motor Speedway is going to be there to support Joe Graff Jr. this weekend in the number 07 of the Xfinity Series. So we're seeing more and more of that happening. I like it. I think it's a good idea. A lot of these are happening because the drivers are reaching out to some of these celebrities, and they are responding by coming back and donating, you know, investing, if you will, in the Cup Series drivers that they're working with. So Joe Graff Jr., I know, also had Antonio Brown. There was another driver with Brian Vargas had Kamara on his hood. So this is just another one in a series of sports celebrities that are getting behind the drivers. And I like this trend. I hope we see more and more of that trend. It's a nice crossover, I think, between NASCAR and the rest of the sports world to see a lot of these people coming on board. And it wouldn't surprise me to see other celebrities besides the sports world kind of support some of these drivers. It just takes the matter of some of these teams reaching out to them and asking, and you know what they say, you know, you have to ask in order to receive. So, Jay, what are your thoughts about LeBron James coming on board as a sports sponsor this weekend?
Well, it's going to have to wait and see. It depends on what role they come into it. We have seen it in the past, and I know we talked about this already, even when Jordan came in and some of the others we've seen. Michael Jordan is at the track every week. He was a race fan coming in. Back in the day when we saw Randy Moss Motorsports with the Truck Series, his name was on it, but I don't know if anybody ever saw him, you know. So to me, that's the difference there of what level of involvement there is as to – now, that's not to say in the case of, say, LeBron James, if he is putting his name with an investment, that he's not doing things outside of the track of bringing in sponsors or setting things up. Again, that could be a unique situation. But right now the standard we've seen set is the guys that are very involved, hands-on. So we'll have to wait and see what role LeBron James does play and, again, what the benefits of it are down the road. I just don't want to see ones that attach their name to it just so their name is attached, versus actually being involved.
Okay. And we are seeing that, but I'll go over it when it's my turn. So, Tommy, I'm curious to know your thoughts about LeBron James.
Well, I think this is awesome because maybe he'll invest money into that Fenway Sports Group, and maybe then Roush will have more funding and they can be more competitive on race day. And then maybe after a while, LeBron will get involved in the sport of NASCAR. So I think this is really cool. I think this is awesome for everybody. But the other team I wanted to bring up is Floyd Mayweather. He's trying to get involved, and I like his name for it, the money team. So I really hope he does get involved in the sport too. I remember 50 Cent was involved at one point as well. I know he was at a Daytona 500 a couple years ago. I remember that. I feel like Blake Shelton, I think he's involved in it too. So there are a lot of celebrities out there that are getting involved, and I think that's awesome. I want more fans, and I want more competitive cars with drivers that need to be in competitive cars. So I think this is amazing. I think it's going to work out, hopefully, for NASCAR.
I definitely think it is a smart move for a lot of these teams, and I'll tell you why. I think what's happening in some cases, maybe not in all cases, but it helps to bring a little more parity to the racing on the track, I think, when you get a big investor like that comes in. Now, just to be clear, LeBron James is actually investing in the Fenway Sports Group, which is part of Fenway Racing, Roush Fenway Racing. So his investment is actually part of that whole Fenway Sports Group. So it is a little bit different. But again, I think it's exciting to see a lot of these people come in. We also saw Pitbull be involved in sports with the racing team, so with Trackhouse Racing. So I think some of these guys are getting involved in a big way. When you think about Pitbull being a co-owner with that Trackhouse Racing with Justin Marks, that's definitely being involved. I know with Antonio Williams, he was coming to the racetrack to be supportive of Joe Graff Jr. And looking for how he can help support him from a financial perspective and looking for new opportunities for him. So he was getting very actively involved. Kamara, I think that's how you pronounce it. He was involved with Ryan Vargas and his team in a very active way. I just think this is a great trend that we're seeing, as I mentioned before. And I think we will see people involved in a very active way, but we're also going to see people like LeBron James that are supporting the group as a whole with his investment in Fenway Sports Motorsports Group. So I think it's a positive for the sport overall. It's a positive for these drivers that are reaping the rewards of those benefits. And I know that some of these drivers were actively involved in reaching out. And I know what Joe Graff Jr. told us is that it was part of his doctor, a doctor that he's working with that, you know, a lot of these drivers go to psychological support for getting that winning attitude, if you will. And it's not just NASCAR drivers that are doing that. It's football players that are doing that too. And that's how the connection was made, is they were both going to this same doctor. So I really think this is a wonderful, wonderful thing. So, Jay, I'm going to step off my box now and go to you.
Well, you know me, and I'm generally enthusiastic. I'm optimistic about a lot of things, but I also hang out with Mike, so it kind of pulls the other way, too. so since he's not here tonight, I'll represent him a little bit. There is definitely the potential and good things that could happen from it. It's a matter of whether or not it does and come to fruition. a couple more that I thought back of the Hall of Fame racing that tried to come in.
Yeah.
You know, you can't just put your name out there and then expect it to happen. And Tommy brought up Floyd Mayweather. You know, that's one I've been excited about and waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting. That's the kind of thing I have the concern about. And some of the ones that we have seen not be successful in the past, and as I see it and believe, I think that is why, is because they thought just putting their name out there would make it happen, and that's not how it happens.
Okay. So, Tommy, what are your thoughts about that?
I remember Dan Marino racing, too, back in the late 90s. That was another one, but I just still think it's really exciting, and I see the potential there, too, and I just hope that it works out because there's a lot of people talking that they want to get involved. I mean, Michael Jordan's involved now, and you brought up Pitbull and Alvin Kamara. Bernard Pollard, he's a huge fan now, too, so I really hope that they do get into NASCAR and invest and get sponsorship and any way they can help. I think would be awesome, and I hope that it does trend that way and it works out.
Okay. Okay, we're ready to move to the next topic. So, Jay, I'm going to go to you for that one.
All right. I know I've put up a couple again today here. Let me see what we're going to pull next. What's that?
I put quite a few myself out.
Looking at the dirt race at Bristol, as I've told you, this has been a roller coaster for me. I'm excited about it. I'm concerned about it. I'm excited about it. I'm concerned about it. Unfortunately, right now, we've hit that concern part. If you haven't been following the Dirt Track Nationals there, the couple weeks worth of racing prior to the Cup Series, there's been some good racing, but there has been some wrecks and some torn up race cars.
Okay, Tommy, your thoughts?
I'm still super excited for the trucks and the Cup Series on dirt. I feel like there is definitely the potential that it'll be a wreck fest, but I still think it's going to be really entertaining and unique and interesting, and hopefully it works out and it isn't like that, but maybe the heat races will help out with that too. They'll have all the practice in, so that way maybe it won't be a wreck fest, but they haven't raced on dirt in years, so it's definitely going to be unique and the potential for a lot of wrecks. But I'm still super excited. I can't wait for all of it. There's so many Cup drivers now in the truck that that's going to be amazing.
Yeah, that's exciting as well to have the Cup drivers. So many of the Cup drivers that are in the Truck Series for this particular race, but. Let me just say, I said this before, and I'm going to repeat it again. I've had my concerns, if you will, about this from the beginning because of the banking. This is not a traditional dirt race. There's banking at Bristol Motor Speedway. I know we talked about it before, and they're saying with so many heat races and all the racing that's taking place, by the time the Cup Series races, it's going to be pretty compacted. That's going to present its own challenges, especially on a track that is banked. These guys are used to racing on dirt tracks that are flat. They don't typically race on a dirt track that is banked. So I think that's why you're seeing the demo derby in the Bristol Dirt Nationals that are taking place this week. And I think that's why we're going to see the same thing when the trucks and the Cup Series race there next week. And the heat races, it's going to end up taking out some of these drivers before they even get to the main event. So I hope they're bringing a lot of backup power, and we'll have to see what happens. But I'm expecting a demo derby at Bristol Motor Speedway with the dirt on the same surface. And And even if it gets compacted, it's still going to be a wreck fest because it's going to be super slick, and these guys are going to be slipping and sliding all over the place. So it's going to be interesting, I will say that, and it's going to be fun to watch. So, Jay, what are your thoughts?
Well, you mentioned the banking, and I know we talked about this, and I did hear an actual number to it. Bristol is 33 degrees banking. The way they have done the dirt, they brought it down to a 19 degrees of banking. So they tried to minimize that. My concern is when you talk about a lighter car, such as the Crate Late models and the modifieds that have been running there this week along with the street stocks, these are the guys that run weekly on dirt tracks. Like you said, maybe not quite such a bank track, but they're the regulars. So you're talking about bringing a cup car, a heavier cup car, as well as the trucks. Not looking good in that with a lot of them not having a whole lot of dirt experience. I will say this, when it comes to that, talk about supporting a track and all that of, you know, if you're going to talk about it, you should be out there supporting it. Well, after Saturday with the late model race, I'll let you know what it looks like from the Kowicki Terrace, seats 8 and 9, I believe. No, row 8, seats 1 and 2. Okay? I'm not going to talk bad about it and say I'm not going to watch it. I'm going to be there for the late model race on Saturday. But I expect to probably see a little bit of carnage.
Okay. Tommy, your comments?
I'm just still super excited, and even if it is a wreck fest, it's still so unique, and they've been hyping it up, and I'm just ready for it. All those cup guys in the trucks now, I can't wait for that, too, and Jessica Friesen, you know, and Haley Deegan, so who knows what will happen, and you're right about the heat races, too. Hell, they're all probably going to be a backup car starting in the back, but maybe that'll be an advantage too if it is a wreck fest, because then they can just, after everybody wrecks out in the front, they can wreck out.
Yes, this is going to be racing like we've never seen before, except for maybe at the Bristol Dirt Nationals. But like Jay said, these are going to be lighter cars that are racing this week. When these heavy cup cars get there, it's going to be a whole new ball game. And 19 degrees of banking is still banking. So I just think it's going to be – I'm with you, Tommy, all the way. I'm excited for it. I'm excited to see all the different people that are coming on board to race these races. But I think even the most experienced dirt racer – is going to be challenged at Bristol Motor Speedway on dirt. So, Jay, your final thoughts?
Yeah, you're right. The excitement is definitely there. It is one of those as a track, one of the first tracks I actually went to a race. I will say this. I don't care if they're racing go-karts or wagons or something. If you get the opportunity to go to Bristol, go to Bristol. We talked about the Speedway charity event at Atlanta. I have walked on the track at Bristol for that same reason. I don't remember if the price was the same, but got to walk with the likes of Rusty Wallace. I know was one of them. Brian Vickers, I think, was involved. Bristol is a unique facility, the last great Coliseum, and I would go there to visit it for, like I said, any reason if you get the opportunity. I am looking forward to it. Like I said, it's been a roller coaster for me. And unfortunately, we're talking about it. Weather's a factor as of tonight going into this weekend. I know that's been a concern for the cup race. So we'll have to see. Hopefully that all pushes through as well.
We'll have to all keep our fingers crossed. Okay, let me see if I can find another hot topic here that we can talk about. They've been talking about the possibility of moving the number from the door to the rear corner panel. And I wanted to get your guys' thoughts about it because I've noticed we've already seen that in some of the other racing series, and I'm trying to remember which car it was I saw this on. I know I posted a picture from Twitter. So let me just see if I can find that while we go to you guys. But they have had this in some of the other series with the number on that rear corner panel, and it seems like it's worked out well. So what are your guys' thoughts about moving that to allow for more room for the sponsors? So, Jay, we'll start with you on this one.
Well, and I think this was already last year when we had this, because I believe it was for the All-Star race at Bristol where they actually allowed that for the first time in Cup Series, if I'm not mistaken, that they allowed that during the All-Star race at Bristol. I'm one as a fan. What's that?
They did that last year. You're right.
Yeah, okay. I knew we had had this conversation. As a fan, I really could care less. As an announcer, I'm trying to think who it was that was on the morning show, the morning drive this morning. One of the reporters or something, they said that as long as it has a number on it somewhere so the car can be identified, and as an announcer, yeah, that's a must-have, have that car number on there somewhere. For the sponsors, I can see where playing around with that or moving it could certainly be a benefit. So for me as a fan, like I said, doesn't matter. Announcer, as long as it's on there somewhere and it's standard for each car, I will say that. When you talk about going to local tracks, there's not a mandate of every car, it has to be in the same spot. So I like the fact that NASCAR says, hey, if we're going to do it this way, it's uniform. Everybody's going to be in the same spot. I like that. But as far as the location then, if that's what the sponsors need and that's what's driving it, then by all means do it. I'm not opposed to the change, but it also isn't going to change my view of racing because, again, it's the number.
Okay. Tommy, your thoughts?
Well, after watching it at the Bristol race last year, the All-Star race, I'm fine with them changing it too. Like, if they decide to not change it, then the number gets to stay the way it's been, and I'm fine with that. But if the sponsors want to have more sponsorship room, then move it to the back, because I didn't think it looked that bad at the Bristol race last year. I thought it looked better than it was. I remember before I watched the race thinking, oh, I don't want them to move it. I want it to be the same. But then after seeing it, I was, well, it's not that bad. And it's still basically, they only moved it back a little bit. Like, it's barely, I mean, it's almost like they barely moved it. So I'm not against them moving it at all if they want to do that. But as I said, if they don't, then it stays the same, and I'm fine with that too.
Okay. I think I'm okay with it as well. I've got a couple of examples of photographs. I don't know if you're on Twitter or not, Tommy, but I'm going to go ahead and retweet a couple of these tweets so that anybody listening might be able to follow along with what I'm saying. But here's one. Here's the fabulous Hudson Hornet with the number placement very similar to what they're talking about doing. This is an old-time NASCAR with exactly the numbering on the rear quarter panel as well as the front quarter panel. And then the sponsorship information on the side of the car. But they also did something else unique. They've got the number on the top corners, front and back, as well. And it's pretty big so that it can be seen pretty well, too. So there's that picture. And then another one that I'm going to retweet here that shows it doesn't actually have the numbers on here, but it shows how the sponsorship packaging can be shown for some of the newer cars. And this shows the Coca-Cola car, a DeWalt car, and the Shell Helix car, and how that sponsorship can be enhanced by moving the car number to a different location. And they've got the number up on the front window over by the driver's side, and it's also on the back window, the back rear window, not the window that goes across the back of the car, but on the back, like, left side, you can see the car number. So it's a little bit different placements of the car numbers in those examples. So just to give fans an example of what we're talking about with some of these cars, and giving more space for the sponsorship promotion, that's what this is all about. And I have no problem with the number as long as we can see that number as fans. I think that's important. But even more important is making sure that the spotters can see that number when they're helping their drivers on the track. So that's the only concern I have on it. I hope it's big enough placement in a place that the spotters can see it. So, Jay, what are your follow-up comments?
Yeah, you brought up a very interesting point there of the spotters. You know, I said from the announcer standpoint, which case I think that, you know, in a NASCAR, again, in an attempt to at least remain standard, the one on the roof would be the one to remain the most constant and the biggest. When you're talking about seeing it, say, from the stands, that would depend on the track. You know, a short track like Bristol, you're going to be fine no matter where it is because you're going to be that close. But on a track like Daytona or Talladega, there you're talking about needing it to be a little bit more pronounced in an area that you can view where you can't necessarily see the roof of every car. And as you mentioned, like I said, the spotters, it is very key. You're right. But I do like some of the things that we've seen, and if you've watched any kind of other racing, enduro racing, I know the Australian V8 Supercar Series have ones, and I think a couple of those pictures that you have might have, one of them at least might have come from, or that style anyway, where it's on the windshield. Now, when you're watching it on TV, that's where it comes into play, because as the production team can focus on it when they're showing the car, so fans can relate at the track, I think, is where you'd run into the issue if it's on the windshield or on the quarter window or something like that. It's the fans at the track that might not be able to see it as well. So, again, I have faith NASCAR is going to make a prudent decision for the fans, for the sponsors, which I think that is where it's coming into play. And I understand what they're looking for as far as getting their money's worth on the car. So I think that an agreement can be made. And I think ultimately it comes down to two groups of people, one that want to see change and whatever, and then you have that group of, that just rebel against change. They like things the way they are. They don't want to see change of any kind, you know, because this really, to me, isn't that big a deal. It really isn't. But
okay,
I know that some of them
say. Okay, let me jump in here, Jay.
Oh, yep, go ahead. I was wrapped up anyway.
Oh, okay. Let me jump in. I've only got less than 60 seconds now. We are at that time of our show where we are going to go off the air at exactly 10:30 p.m. Eastern Time. We like to alert people just in case there's a new listener out there wondering why we're going off the air mid-sentence. Just know that we are continuing to record the rest of the conversation as part of our overtime bonus material that's available on our podcast. So, again, if you've listened up to this point, what I'll do is go out on Twitter when we're done just to let everybody know that the podcast is available. You can go to the show then and fast forward to the two-hour mark to hear the rest of the conversation, which is typically around 30 minutes or so. So, again, we just want to alert you so that you're not taken off guard, and that's going to happen here in less than 30 seconds. So, Tommy, first of all, Jay, did you have anything more to say?
No, I was good with that.
Okay, so, Tommy, we'll go to you next.
I don't think it's that big of a deal either. It's just they're just moving the number a little bit. But you did bring up a good point about the spotters not being able to see the numbers and that being an issue at Daytona and Talladega for sure. But the Bristol All-Star race last year, I guess, like you said, it was a short track, so it wasn't an issue there, and they can see the numbers still. But NASCAR will make the right decision, and either way, I'm fine with it. Like I said, either it's going to stay the way it is, or they'll just move it back a couple of inches or feet.
Yeah, I agree with you guys all the way around. And, Jay, you brought up the fans not being able to see the pit crew, any number of people. The important thing, and I agree with you guys, NASCAR will make the right decision here. They've got to make sure that all of those people can see the car number easily, whether it's on the top of the car or on the side of the car. They've got to make sure that everybody can see that car number because that's important. Other than that, I don't have any other thing to say on that. So, Tommy, we're back to you for the next hot topic. Tommy, are you still with us?
Let's do the Dale Jr. doing the iRacing.
Okay, Dale Jr. made an announcement that he's coming into iRacing, so I guess I'll go next on this. I think it's pretty cool to see that happening. I think the iRacers are going to love it. And I know that Dale Jr., back in his days when he was kind of hiding out in the motor coach home, that's what he was doing, is he was iRacing. And that's where he found drivers like Martin Truex Jr. and brought him into NASCAR and other drivers. So I think it's a really good thing to see Dale Earnhardt Jr. going iRacing. And I think the drivers are going to love it. The fans are going to love it. And I think that if he's looking for the future drivers to come into NASCAR, I think you've got a good eye there with Dale Earnhardt Jr. Behind the wheel of an iRacing car. And I think it's a very positive thing. And they did show a picture of his car. Let me see if I can retweet that one real quick. I can't. Here it is. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and see. Actually, I'm going to have to put it out as a tweet here on Twitter. So let's go to the next person. Jay, what are your thoughts?
Well, they say this is where your career takes a nosedive if you say anything negative towards Dale Earnhardt Jr., right? Let me start going back to when the iRacing thing really became big was during the COVID. We weren't allowed to race. NASCAR came on board, Fox, I believe it was Fox, a TV partner. It might have been NBC. I don't remember which. And they did the iRacing thing. I understand it was a substitute. To me, it was not a very good one. Total throughout those, I watched a total of maybe 10 minutes of that. It's just not my thing. So that aside, for the sport, I see it as a good thing. There is, like you mentioned, the scouting of some talent. We've talked about some of the drivers that have come out of iRacing. Martin Truex, that's how Junior found him. William Byron, that's all he had done.
Yeah.
So there is benefits to it. Junior being involved in it is going to expand that. When it comes to talking about it or asking questions about it, don't ask me because I'm going to tell you I probably didn't watch it. But that's just me. So, again, it's not anything bad or negative against Dale Jr. It's just iRacing thing is not my thing. But I know that especially with this generation, that's where the fan base is, as well as, again, the different things. I know it did some great things for publicity as sponsors and things like that. So on that aspect of it, I'm for it. I just won't be the one involved with it.
Okay. Tommy, what are your thoughts?
I'm glad he's doing it again. I wouldn't be surprised because I think there's four open spots and he's one of them, so they've got like three more. I wouldn't be surprised if Bobby Labonte's in it because he was in all of them last year too, I feel like. So that would be awesome too. I like the legends, or if that's what you want to call them, I guess, the old heads. I'd like seeing them in there. Even Gordon did it. He was terrible, but – I thought they were entertaining. I enjoyed them, and I'm glad that they're still doing some because it did attract quite a bit of a fan base. And I hope that it translates over to great other races on Sunday. But, yeah, William Byron is really good at iRacing, and so is Timmy Hill and all them, of course. Timmy Hill's not in very good equipment, but William Byron's got a few wins now, so it does show that there is some talent to it. I like that paint scheme, the degree car. I like how he's not even racing anymore, and he still has different sponsors. and it's also cool how Junior brought back he's really into this iRacing stuff. He even brought back North Wilkesboro last year for them to race at.
That is awesome. Okay, those people who are Dale Jr. fans are going to love the number 88 degree car. I think that was a really clever sponsor push there. And I think Dale Jr. is going to bring a lot of new eyes to the iRacing fold. And it's going to be a win-win-win-win-win all the way around for everybody. And I can't wait. Now, he's got listed here the schedule. March 24th, he's going to be racing on Bristol Dirt on Fox Sports 1 at 8 p.m. Eastern. I'm thinking, hold on now. This schedule, is this an iRacing schedule?
Yeah, that should be
schedule?
Before. I believe so. Because the 24th
okay,
should be next Wednesday or Thursday. Wednesday,
okay. So, yeah, okay, this is all, okay. So Wednesday, March the 24th, he's racing on the Bristol Dirt on Fox Sports 1 at 8 p.m., Wednesday, April 21st, it's Talladega on Fox Sports 1 at 7 p.m. Eastern. May the 5th, again, another Wednesday. All of these are Wednesdays at Darlington on Fox Sports 1 at 8 p.m. Eastern time. May 19th at COTA, that's going to be exciting, on Fox Sports 1 at 7 p.m. Eastern. And on June 2nd, the track to be determined, but it will be on Fox Sports 1 at 8 p.m. Eastern. So this is pretty darned exciting, I think, news for especially Dale Earnhardt Jr. fans, but I think for anybody who is enjoying the iNASCAR racing. Okay, so Jay, it's now your turn. Oh, wait a second.
Well, again,
okay, go ahead.
Yeah, there are some cool aspects to it. Tommy mentioned there the North Wilkesboro. For fans that haven't seen that historic track, you talk about, and that might be one that I do choose to watch at least a little bit of, say, COTA, of seeing what a cup car looks like on that track and getting a feel for it in preparation for the real thing. And Tommy also mentioned hopefully that the correlation, you know, if you become involved in the iRacing portion of it, that then it transfers over to fan attendance, and the sport as a whole. So, again, I see benefits to it. I'm already a fan, so I don't have to go through that, though.
Okay. So, Tommy, your final thought.
iRacing made Dale Jr. like I can't remember. Is he like vice president, or is he kind of like what Steve Letard is,
yes,
Aspire, like a consultant? But
yeah,
either way,
he's involved.
It's awesome. They couldn't have picked a better person because he even likes bringing back other tracks. Like, I feel like they bring back as much as they can, which, like I said, it's awesome. Like Myrtle Beach Speedway is now, I think they're going to tear that down. But that's on there to race that. And another thing that he did with North Wilkesboro that was cool, you know, I've only rode by and saw the abandoned. I didn't get to see it when they last raced there, but it kind of looks like that in the pictures. Like, they even had, like, the red and white buildings and wall and stuff. So they did a really good job with it, and it's just amazing that he can do that. But I just want the people that are really into the iRacing to really get into the actual stuff, cause it's so much, it's better. But I do enjoy watching the video games too, though.
The best part is the reset button, right, Jay?
Yeah. Well, what was that with Raja Caruso? I think I asked him that if first time out on an actual track, if he was like, "Can we reset?"
He said he was going to ask his crew chief for that button. Okay, Jay, it's your turn for the next hot topic.
Well, I saw this one. I think you put this up, Sharon. The and again, I was aware of it. The COVID detecting dogs at Atlanta. They're getting a trial run there at Atlanta. You know, to me, it's similar to they use different types of dogs as far as at airports as well for various reasons. Generally speaking, it's a drug sniffing. I don't know how they are going to detect the COVID, but that's something that's apparently come up and is an issue.
Okay, Tommy, your thoughts about having the dog sniffing dogs as a trial at Atlanta to sniff out the COVID virus?
I didn't really know there was an issue yet, but I was just going to say, I think that it's, if those dogs really can detect if you have COVID or not, that is really awesome. That is cool. I don't, how do they train a dog to do that? But I mean, it's not surprising because they can sniff out drugs and stuff, but that's just wild that they can detect who has COVID or not. But I definitely can see where there is the risk there, because if the dogs are wrong, but what I believe I saw is if the dog does detect that you have it, that you have to get tested by the doctor to see if you actually do have it, because the dog could be wrong too. So, I mean, I don't feel like NASCAR is going to do anything to put anybody at risk, but I mean, maybe it'll work out, and it probably will, because dogs are smart, so maybe they'll get it all right.
Yeah, I think this is a good idea. There's dogs that sniff out cancer as well. Dogs are specifically trained to sniff out that particular smell, whatever that is, and they've been successful at doing that. And now we've got dogs that are specifically trained to sniff out COVID. So, you know, what some fans are complaining about is they're citing the Fourth Amendment and violating their rights. Bob Pockrass put out a comment, though, saying that's for, you know, a criminal situation. The Fourth Amendment applies to police searches for criminal activity, not searches done by a private security for a business. And so the Fourth Amendment is not applicable in this particular case. And it's actually helping everybody and not violating anyone's right if they identify somebody who has the COVID virus. If I had the COVID virus and a dog sniffed it out, I'd be so happy that he was able to tell me that so that I could go get it taken care of. So I don't understand why they're complaining about it, but that's what kind of brought it to my attention, is that there were people complaining about their constitutionally protected right, you know, they were opposed to having the dogs there. But this is a good thing, I think, for everybody, and we should applaud NASCAR taking that step. I'm curious to see how it works out for everybody, because as Jay mentioned, this is a trial run to see how well it works. And Tommy, you brought up the point that, you know, if they do sniff COVID, these dogs are going to be able to alert everybody so that it can be addressed. And those people are going to be sent to a doctor right away for his evaluation of that situation. So I think it's definitely a positive thing that NASCAR is doing. And now I want to see what happens this weekend and how it works out. So, Jay, what are your thoughts?
Sharon, since this is your radio show, I'll ask you if I can say people are stupid, because I don't want to say it if you don't think I should.
I think you just did.
Oh, okay, my bad. Yeah, no, it's ridiculous. From the whole Constitution side of it, yeah, that's just absolutely ridiculous. And it says here, after an alert by the dog, the individuals will be isolated, subject to a comprehensive secondary screening by the American Medical Response, or AMR, safety team's lead physician. So you mentioned it, and I'll just say my house. If you're going to come in my house, I say, if you're going to come in my house, I'm going to do this. You know that coming in, you got no argument. If you want to come in my house, that's the way it is. You know, if I tell you got to take your shoes off, right? From that aspect, I don't see where they have any kind of argument about that. My concern would be more so of people that are afraid of dogs, okay? That's where my concern would come in from that. But overall, looking at this and reading through it, going back up to the top of this article, and this is on NASCAR.com, if this is one of the ways, if you've been anywhere where they have any kind of procedure to check you in before you go in, you're eliminating time, manpower, the process, because some of them are very thorough of how they check you before they allow you into a certain area. So if this is, you can get, and I would say get by because you're not sneaking by them, but if the dog is one that can give that early detection, it's going to minimize all that and just pull out the isolated ones that they have detected something. And then, like Tommy said, it's going to be a doctor that determines it. It's not based off of the dog. So, like I said, it's sad to see, because I'm sure it's a possibility, as everybody is already talking about before it even happens, of a lawsuit and this and that. And like I said, I think that's just ridiculous.
Okay. Tommy, your follow-up on that.
Yeah, I think the dogs are just going to be there to sniff out COVID. I don't think they're going to be there to sniff out anything else. So, you did bring up a good point. What if you're scared of dogs? I mean, I work in the insurance business, and I can only think if a dog bites somebody, those dogs are so well trained, I don't see that happening. But if it did, from the insurance perspective, I know that's not going to be a good lawsuit for them to pay. But I still just think it's awesome that a dog can detect COVID. So I don't see where this goes wrong, and I hope it goes well. And I'm interested to see how it'll play out, but I don't think there should be any issues.
Leave it to an insurance person to think about that. That's a good point, though, Tommy. But I really think that these dogs are trained and not to bite individuals. The only scenario where I can think of if the dog were to bite an individual is if the dog feels that it's being threatened. So hopefully people won't be silly enough to do that, and this will all work very well. Hopefully people will respect the dog, and the dog will respect people. That dog is trained to do something that is very beneficial for the greater good. And I think that's a positive. And like I say, I'm just waiting to hear, how it goes this weekend and if there are any complaints and what those complaints might be, if there is as silly as some of the ones we're already hearing, or if there's something else that does happen that we're not thinking about now. So, Jay, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, like I said, that would be my concern. Again, if something were to happen with the situation with the dog, more than likely it is because of the actions of the individual. Now, and I'm going to not name a name. Somebody I know that, like I said, is a little more terrified of dogs, whether they get scared or whatever, but normally there too, I don't think a dog would react to that. It's if they feel threatened or motivated out of anger or whatever from the person. So as long as you're cool, they're going to be cool and do their job. Like you said, they're very well trained. And I don't even know then if it's a specific for a sniffing dog like that of what their training is as far as attacking, which there should be no need unless you're fighting against it. And maybe NASCAR has something that they say, hey, if you're really opposed to having a dog around you, come through this screening area and we'll do it manually or, you know, with machines and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So they might even have that option available if you really truly are afraid of dogs. So, you know, and it, maybe that evolves into the next time of that option of a line for that, you know. I will say this, again, it's not like it's a big deal. I want to say it was Minneapolis. It was a, what do you call it? I don't know, like an glass air tube that they send around you rather than a police pat down or anything like that. I went through that once. They pulled me out in my bag for metal. They wanted to know if I had handled guns or weapons or whatever. Turns out that metal had come, I had been golfing and it came off the golf clubs. Yeah, it took an extra 5 minutes, but that also, you know that they're doing to protect you. You know, that's what I think people
mm-hmm.
don't understand is they're doing it to protect you and everybody else so that we can all come to the racetrack. I mean, that's the ultimate goal.
Exactly.
I just, so you didn't answer my question, Sharon. Am I allowed to say that again or not?
No, I think we're done doing that. Okay. Okay. We'll let that be the final word on that. But I do want to bring up a subject that Mike Orzel brought up on our Hot Topic channel, and that is a lot of you will recall last year there was a crew member that died in a terrible car crash in the Keys, and it was late last year. Well, the autopsy information came back, and apparently he had a blood alcohol level of 0.11, plus he had marijuana in his system. Now, Bob Pockris came out with that information. As we all know, Bob Pockris is very thorough and takes his responsibility as a journalist very seriously in reporting what he feels to be newsworthy information. Some people took this as a slam, I guess, to a tragedy that happened and not understanding where Bob Pockris was coming from, I think. But I wanted to get your guys' thoughts about that and whether or not Bob should have reported this. So, Jay, I guess we start with you on this one. Are you there, Jay? Uh-oh. Where's Jay? It sounds like we lost him again. Okay, so Tommy, I guess we'll go to you.
I just think, I mean, it was all.
Okay.
It was already. Is Jay back home?
No.
Oh, I just think that it's just sad news. I mean, it makes it even worse. If I was in Bob's position, I'm not too sure. I don't know if I would have shared it, but I mean, I wouldn't have been giving him a hard time about it. I mean, he is just doing his job, but I feel like that it is kind of personal, but I also understand that he's just reporting newsworthy stuff from NASCAR. So, I mean, it's unfortunate that it is what it is, but I mean, that's kind of how it is, and he's already done it at this point, so, I mean, there's no need to give him a hard time about it. I mean, he could always take it down if it does become a bigger problem, so that's the way I look at it.
Okay, well, I think Jay got booted off again, and, of course, once you get booted off after the 10:30 time frame, we can't get you back on, so... I'm kind of razzing him a little bit, asking him if he's doing it on purpose because it's happened so often with him. But really, I'm just kidding. But I do want to just say I agree with you. It's sad that happened. It's horrible and terrifically painful, I'm sure, for the family. But here's the thing. There are HIPAA laws, and as long as it was reported publicly, you know, as a journalist, you do kind of have an obligation to go back and report the rest of the story. A lot of people wonder what the rest of the story is. And so if it's reported publicly and Bob Pockers picks up on that, and I know he does look for that information, then I think it's important that he does kind of report back. As horrific as it is, as painful as it is to hear, it is the rest of the story, and we all are saddened by that crew member's death. So, everybody understands the gravity of this situation, but I think there's also a benefit to reporting it to kind of alert people to the dangers of driving while you're under the influence. It is dangerous. And you are putting your life in someone else's hands. You're certainly putting your health, your life in that person's hands. So I think there's a benefit to him reporting it from that point of view as well. So maybe Jay will tell us on our Hot Topics channel what his thoughts are on this topic. If I don't know that he can hear where we are, but I'll watch and see if he does post anything. But what is your...
I just understand the both points of views. Like, the family probably doesn't want that information out. I understand that. But Bob is just doing his job. So, and he, and y'all, you guys are right. I was just going to add on that this just shows that you shouldn't drink and drive. Shouldn't do it. But, I mean, other than that, it's just... It was already a sad situation, and now it's just more sad, and it's brought back up, and then now it's worse. It's not a good situation. So that's the only reason why I see maybe he shouldn't have brought it back up, but at the same time, he is just doing his job, and hopefully this just promotes awareness, too, that you shouldn't drink and drive.
Yeah, and that was Jay's points, too. He did say, sad to see, but hopefully it serves as a public awareness message. And that's kind of what I was saying, too, is that it serves as a reminder to everybody that it's not really a good thing to do. And I know we all need to be reminded of that sometimes. So that's a good thing. Now, let's see, I guess that's the last word on that particular topic, and we are at the top of the hour trying to decide. Oh, okay. Yeah, he's trying to figure out why he keeps getting booted off every week. So we'll try to get him working on that so that it doesn't keep happening. But, Tommy, let's go ahead and do our roundtable before we sign off here and talk about anything. I know we've got your Bristol Dirt Race piece that will be coming out after this weekend. We'll have that out sometime next week. Is there anything else that you're working on?
I have not worked on anything else yet, but my dirt article will be coming out soon, and still working on getting my social media. Need to get that updated so that way I can give you my Twitter handle and stuff. But other than that, just thanks for having me back on the show. I really appreciate it.
Well, we enjoy having you on the show with us, Tommy, so thanks for being here. And Jay is MoparMJ8 on Twitter, and I think just Michael J. Huseman on Facebook, and I don't know about Instagram, but I know he's on there. And we did we are publishing tomorrow an article for Jay on the different winners, the streak that's going on right now with the five different winners in the first five races, and some of the records that can potentially be broken if this streak continues throughout the next six races and maybe beyond that. So look for that article to be coming out on Fan for Racing tomorrow. We've got it all edited and ready to go, and we'll be publishing it tomorrow morning. I I'm sure Jay's going to be at a racetrack. He does announcing at the racetracks. He mentioned he's going to be at the Nationals, the Bristol Nationals on dirt. So there's a couple of things that I know he's going to be doing. So watch for Jay's comments on those places that he's going to be involved with this weekend. I am Fan for Racing site on Twitter and Fan for Racing blog and radio everywhere else, including our website, fanforracing.com. I do have an article that I did not get published today from Owen, and that is for the power ranking this week. So I'm going to try to also get that up sometime tomorrow, and that's for the NASCAR Cup Series. So watch for that power ranking to be coming out. We do have Sam's recap of the Phoenix race up at fanforracing.com. You can see that there. And we've got a lot going on with the racing this weekend. I want to just mention, in addition to the three races with the Atlanta, again, there's the Winter Showdown that's starting on Friday and will continue throughout the weekend. And then also IMSA is racing Sebring this weekend. That started on Wednesday and continues through Saturday. So even more racing available for fans. So definitely keep your eyes out for that. So with that, a big shout out to our listeners for tuning in. We appreciate you taking time to hear what we have to say. We did have Bill Lester on. I'm sorry, I've got the hiccups. We had Bill Lester on last Monday talking about racing in the trucks this weekend, as well as his new book. We had Bridget Burgess on earlier tonight during the first half hour. She's racing with BMI Racing in the ARCA West Series. She talked about her race at Phoenix and the fact that this is the first female driver and mother-daughter team that is in racing. So we're definitely excited about that. Next week we have Joe Graff Jr. on Monday night at 9 o'clock. And then Isabel Robusto from Rev Racing, she's racing the Advanced Auto Parts Weekly Touring Series. She will be on Thursday night at 8:40 p.m. next week. So with that, Tommy, I think we're ready to say goodnight to all of our listeners.
Thanks for having me again, and have a good night.
Okay. Have a good night, everybody. Enjoy your race weekend. And we will talk to you on the other side.